This panel is the Environmental and Energy Data Management panel, and kind of just to set the stage what we're going to talk about, and you probably heard a lot of this over the time frame of the conference, but it clearly, and Mike articulated some of the initiatives from the administration very well, but this is a very hot topic, obviously, under this administration for not just our nation, but worldwide. You know, how we're going to capitalize on new energy sources, how we're going to find new energy sources, you know, and in the meantime, how are we going to protect the environment? So very timely topics, and obviously the administration's putting their money where their mouth is here on this particular topic and priority area. Under ARRA, of course, the stimulus package, $38.7 billion went to Department of Energy for various energy-type initiatives. EPA, $7.2 billion came through to EPA for different initiatives across the nation relating to the environment. And as Mike talked about, the administration's also embarking on multiple green IT, green-type initiatives. So with all these initiatives going on across the nation, all the money being invested in energy initiatives and in environmental initiatives, you know, we have to think about data, okay? How are we going to manage data? How are we going to understand how these investments are actually contributing to better energy sources, to a better environment, you know, across the board? And obviously, this is going to bring a lot of requirements for better data management, better systems management, et cetera. So our topic, as I said, is the environmental and energy data management, and we certainly have the top experts in the government here on our panel to discuss this particular issue and how each of these individual agencies are helping to manage this data. These data issues, challenges, and opportunities, really. So with that being said, let me go ahead and just give you a brief introduction of all of our panel members. So our first panel member right here, and I'll go from left to right here. Well, my left. Yeah, left to right. Yours, too. First one is Todd DeBolt. He's the director of the Project Management Office in the Office of Water at EPA. And Todd's worked at EPA in the Office of Water for about 13 years in a variety of positions. He's currently the director of the Office of Water IM Project Management Office, and he's an absolutely amazing emerging leader in EPA and across the whole environmental area. So I really look forward to hearing from Todd, and he really did an awesome job on ARRA and the stimulus funding, figuring out how to use systems, how to use data to get that money out as quickly and as rapidly as possible to our stakeholders. So he'll talk a little bit about that. So welcome, Todd, to the panel. So welcome, Todd. Okay. Our next panel member is Adrian Gardner, another superstar emerging leader in IT in general, and specifically now in the National Weather Service. So Adrian is the Chief Information Officer at the National Weather Service, and he oversees the implementation of IT throughout the service. And his previous position was a Deputy Associate CIO for IT at Energy. So he brings an incredible amount of knowledge in both the energy area, and look forward to hearing about some of the great initiatives. Adrian, so welcome, Adrian, as well. So our next panelist is Carl Statton, and he is the Deputy Chief Information Officer at Department of Energy. Did I pronounce your name wrong? Statton? Okay, so there we go. I wasn't here when you were talked about three other times, so I got the Statton now. So Carl Statton, Deputy CIO at Department of Energy, and so he's been there since October 2006. He's served in a variety of positions across the federal government, and in fact, are you Adrian's predecessor at one point?
A couple of three jobs back.
Okay, yeah. All right, cool. So he was Senior Executive Service. He's been a Senior Executive Service Director of Operations National Weather Service and also CIO at NOAA. So welcome, Carl. He's going to bring a great amount of experience from the energy and NOAA side. So thanks. And our final panelist here is Keith Thurston. He's the Assistant Deputy Associate Administrator, Office of Government-Wide Policy, Office of Technology. You can read this in your book. So, Keith really also, I think many of you probably know Keith. He's done super work for across the government for many, many years, and he's currently at GSA. He's also worked for Treasury, worked for IRS, and doing some super work with data.gov there in the Office of Government-Wide Policy, and also I'm sure looking at a lot of the energy and environmental type initiatives the administration's coming out with. So welcome, Keith, as well. So great. So what we're going to do is I'm going to ask each panelist to kind of answer one general question about what they're doing with data management and their role. And then I have several other questions we're going to ask the panelists. And then I'd really like you to be thinking about what kind of questions you might have for the panelists. So we'll leave some quite a bit of time for your question and some interaction. So with that being said, let me go ahead and get started with a general question I'd like each panelist to answer, starting with Todd. So what are you and your organization doing in the environmental data management area, and what's your particular role in that initiative? So, Todd, you want to start us off?
Sure. As most of you know, EPA's Office of Water is responsible for clean and safe water, and the data needs to manage that type of environment are widespread, but it actually puts us in a unique position. We're mostly a data consumer organization or a secondary user of information. We receive information from the regulated community, from our other federal partners, and from the state and local governments. So our largest challenge in data is actually information exchange. How do you get those multiple stakeholders to exchange information in a common format and add value to that to the decision makers that are writing new policy or measuring the progress of existing policies?
Great.
And I guess that's a nice segue for me. At the National Weather Service, we not only have a continental U.S. Responsibility, but we also have an international responsibility from a standpoint of exchanging information, environmental information across the weather community. We are active participants in what's called the World Meteorological Organization, where the Weather Service Director is the permanent representative for the U.S. on that body. My role in that whole area is to look at the data exchange requirements internationally and nationally that can be applied as they apply to weather. And so one of my main role is really to keep my finger and pulse on what's happening within standard-setting bodies within the U.S., OASIS, so on and so forth, to ensure that those standards can also be implemented across the international community. I also serve as the Data Architecture Subcommittee co-chair under the Federal CIO Council, and so one of the responsibilities under that subcommittee is to actually look at the data standards that are applied across government.
Great, Carl.
Start out by saying I'm just a little unfocused right at the moment because when I was sitting down there at the table here listening to everything this morning, I realized I went broke. Not that anybody raided my bank account, but between Dr. Spinrad and Jeff Egan and Michael Howell, a significant payoff for all the shout-outs that I got. But on top of that was the big payout, personal contribution I had to make to FCEA to not recognize several of you in the audience when it comes to questions. So I'm broke. The Department of Energy is very much involved in energy issues across the board. And each week that goes by at the Department of Energy, I find just another thing that we're working at. And it is quite amazing. If I sat here and tried to tell you everything that we were doing, I would surely miss many things that are important. But you've heard of several things here today. Smart grid and environment, we are entwined in all of those activities. But for the sake of clarity and setting expectations on smart grid, that is a very important thing for the department. It is not in my portfolio, but I am involved with working some of those issues. So if I can answer any questions that you have on the smart grid, I'll make arrangements to get you the answers on those. And when we get around to some other questions, I'll give you some insights on our specific data management activities.
Okay. Great. Keith?
Of course, at GSA, we have a significant portfolio in building management. So the utilization of the smart grid and the funding that was provided through the Recovery Act is going to provide for some increases in the energy management systems in federal buildings across the government. So much of GSA's internal portfolio in this area has to do with federal building management and bringing those up to level when it comes to energy efficiency and management. The reason for me being on this panel, however, is because of our role on data.gov, and that is to bring together a consolidated place where all of the key feeds of data can be and work towards the standardization of those so that we interchange and actually utilize. Adrian's very active in this as well. The key issue that we're facing is many of the individual domains have grown up with their own standards internal to them. And then when you start trying to look across the domains and try to compare information coming out of one stovepipe and another, can you actually process against it? Is it machine readable? And so we're going to be working towards bringing those together in a way that you'll see more standardization, more clarity in how the information was brought about, and especially on things like data quality. So one of the good and bad things that data.gov has brought is a very high visibility to the data that may not have been seen before. And we have data stewards all across the government now that are taking ownership of their data sets and points of contact in each agency working that in such a way that it's going to be beneficial to folks in industry too, because this is a significant step up from what the government's been producing and maintaining archive and data in the past. It's going to be a magnitude of improvement on data quality, I think.
And I'll kind of take that then, and then I'm going to ask both Carl and Keith and Adrian and Todd too to talk a little bit maybe about the, I'm throwing in a question here, a surprise, but I'll answer it first. And then what have you seen? I know, Keith, you just talked a little bit about, the future of data.gov and some of the benefits of putting the data out there. But you know, it's been up several months now. So what benefits have each of you in your organization seen from posting data sets on data.gov? And I'll kind of start off from EPA's standpoint is we published something called our Toxic Release Inventory Data Sets, which is basically exactly what it sounds like, but it's all toxic release information from facilities across the United States. And we posted that data, raw findings from a collection effort we did on data.gov, and we've seen an absolute significant amount of people downloading that data and then mashing up that data in innovative ways that we've never seen before. So one example is Forbes.com, published a list of the top 10 most toxic cities in the United States using our TRI data that was posted on data.gov. Anybody from Atlanta? You're the worst. So we're not too great up here in Baltimore, Washington area either, but it's very interesting how that data was used. So that's one example of how this open government, transparent government, posting a data on data.gov is really helping the community, the public, use and understand what's happening from an environmental standpoint. So, I'll ask kind of each of you guys. Adrian, why don't you start off with, data.gov and some of your experiences.
Yeah, I mean, I chime in on kind of the use of the data in ways in which we never would have foreseen as far as, throwing out there and out there in an innovative way, but a way in which others can actually manipulate. If you look at the weather data, how much it impacts our day-to-day lives. There's so many products that I can't even espouse the number that have been created from just a general putting our data out there in forms that people can mash it up, create new products, and then put it to new uses. I think the overwhelming return on investment for data.gov long term will be, looking at weather service as somewhat a model. Where would the AccuWeathers and the Weather Channels be without the weather service's data? If you think about the government data as a whole, there are industries, budding industries that should be out there, be looking at that data and saying, how can I manipulate it to create new products and services that they'll sell, to either sell or provide free of charge to the community and citizens of the country. So to me, it's really, looking at the data and the data sources as a commodity. This is the first time that the community, whether it be a public sector community or a private sector community, has that opportunity to manipulate the data.
That's great. Good. Carl?
Certainly echo everything that Adrian has said, but one of the things I have seen is sort of a heretofore absence enthusiasm has been absent. What data.gov has really generated is a great deal of enthusiasm, not only in the private sector and the within the citizens as well, but I see it also internal with the Department of Energy. This enthusiasm is spreading, and more and more people are coming and talking to us about how can I get this on data.gov or some equivalent thereof, or even, you know, is what I have a potential for that? And so I'm very pleased to see that, and I think this concept, whether it be on data.gov or something else, is going to continue to grow. So I think the opportunities for merging these data together and coming up with new insights is going to grow exponentially. And there are some, I'm sure, nuggets out there that are going to be, you know, state-changing discoveries, you know, not something brand new, like a new planet or something. It's just going to be a new result from using the existing data that's going to be just immensely, you know, positive impact on this country and the citizens.
Cool. Keith, how about, I know GSA was real critical in standing everything up, making this, you know, kind of presentable, usable, and so what's your observations then on this?
Well, I would agree with what Carl said. You see, in the past, people may not have been the most important thing in the world that they had collected this data and it was available. Now you see a great pride in people who own data sets. They want them to get out there. And what was projected and predicted to come true is coming true, and that is that the value of the data is only when it's utilized. For an agency to collect it and use it in the one way the agency wanted to utilize it denies the other 95% of the use of the data that other agencies may have for it or the industry may have for the same data. And the second part of it was that if you look at the data in other ways, you may see analysis and participation in policy that you didn't expect. We have feedback links on data.gov, and we have an amazing amount of feedback about the data and data sets the public wants, about what the industry wants. Could we please get a data set concerning so-and-so? And those don't go into a black hole. We put those out to the agencies. We track them. There's discussion. Do we have data sets in those areas? Can we get them more seen? The other thing is, in the past, where the whole issue of the federal enterprise architecture and the data reference model, if somebody just thought that was shelf work before, they're finding out now it's very real. Those that did a good job on their DRMs know where their data sets are. They have data set inventories across their agencies. Other agencies are not quite sure where the data sets are and what's in them. So I think it's been a great additional attention and benefit and reutilization of the data, and I think there's going to be opportunities for the companies along the way because the visibility of the data, the quality of the data is becoming more and more important.
And if I can chime in, too, on what Keith is saying, the DRM is extremely important in this whole dialogue. And how, because before we all were concentrating on systems and applications, and the data was kind of just there.
Right.
I mean, so this point that he's making about the DRM is extremely important. Now people are actually looking at the data and managing the resource, which is extremely important as we move forward. And I guess the other piece that he mentioned earlier was the data quality piece. What you're now seeing also is people are more paying more attention to the data quality requirements for managing the data sets that they own.
Yeah, very good point.
To add on there, that the fact that we're managing information becomes a surprise to some people. We got complaints a number of years ago that federal CIOs were really CTOs. We're all focused on the technology, and we had the whole librarian community and the whole data-centric community complaining. Nobody is really managing the information. Nobody's really managing the data. Well, if that was true before, it's not true now. There is a great deal of attention going towards managing the data.
Yeah, that's true. So So I'm going to kind of take that, and Todd, I'm going to ask you to take that to the next level and also talk a little bit about EPA and what you're doing, some of your priorities with data
well,
managers.
Actually,
so jump in.
On the previous issue of data.gov, I agree with everything everyone said. As a direct implementer in a project office with line responsibility to deliver products and services to my customers within the water community, the challenge has become how do you repurpose that information within the resource bounds and constraints of those programs to make it available. And I think, you know, this is creating the wave to create that incentive and drive to do that. But we still need to think about the incentive structures for the line businesses that secondary use of their information is a requirement that has to be budgeted for sustainability.
That's a very good point. Very good point.
Yeah, and I would also say the infrastructure. The other piece is not only the budget piece, but are they positioned from an infrastructure standpoint to support the groundswell of potential customers that are out there now looking at their data sets? I mean, we have the Weather Service, luckily, is positioned to take care of those surges, but there are others that quite frankly, they didn't really think that their data was potentially that important or would be used in those ways. And so we really got to think about the infrastructure impacts. And again, we're beginning to hear back from the agencies and others around those issues.
Yeah, very, very good point. So we kind of talked about the broader, you know, perspective on data.gov and how we're managing data. So I kind of want to get into the specific, your missions, okay? Mm-hmm. So how within each of your agencies are you capitalizing on data and data management to support your environmental and or energy missions? So, Todd, I'd like to start with you. Adrian, I'd like to start with you.
No.
Go ahead, Todd.
Because I was thinking back to some of the data.gov stuff and era, but I think we'll step on ERA a little later on. In terms of the environmental mission, obviously, there's a very good overlap, I think, and we haven't built those bridges as well as we could, between the intelligence community and the environmental community that consumes and uses data. Because you're constantly looking for new indicators and new ways of looking at existing data sets to make new and informed management decisions. And sometimes they're predictions, sometimes they're just steady state. What is our operational environment like? On the drinking water side, for example, traditionally EPA has worried mostly about the regulatory compliance side of things, which from a public health standpoint, letting you know that there's an exceedance in your drinking water is really of limited utility to the consumer. The consumer wants to know, is that going to make me sick? How long was I exposed to it? What's my long-term and chronic effects? So as you trace that need from both the consumer standpoint on water and water quality and what it means in their lives to actually the regulatory agency and how do you use water quality information to make more informed regulatory decisions, are we regulating the right chemicals? Are they at the right levels? Do we need to be looking at different emerging contaminants? How can you look across that entire industry and say, where are we collecting that information, and how does that information need to flow back to the decision maker to make more relevant and timely information? So on a discussion today like this about energy environment, water is critical to that discussion. 3% of the America's energy use actually goes for drinking water and wastewater treatment and drinking water provisioning. And if you include irrigation, that percentage is much higher. So not only do you have a quality nexus, you have an energy nexus. And putting that intelligence into those data networks to make more informed management decisions with this diverse array of stakeholders is what we're looking towards and gearing towards for the future.
Awesome.
So I guess specifically from a Weather Service perspective, we use our data day in, day out for decision making. So unlike a number of agencies, we are all about our data and the timeliness and availability of the data to decision makers, getting it in their hands, and especially during time critical situations. So you know, we're kind of old hat on that side of it. I think when you talk about the energy conservation side now, it's really now beginning to talk about, you know, from a standpoint of how weather impacts data centers, how weather impacts, you know, whether it be a some kind of a solar or a wind power farm or something like that, if you have increased temperatures, how does that inform those decision makers? So putting our data in the hands of not only our normal partners and customers that we would support with, who are the emergency managers, the citizens, and then also the public at large, but also now getting in the hands of industries that can now use that weather data to also make informed decisions about how they would actually stage or make informed decisions to cut kinds of energy use and then use that information to trend over a period of time when they would see the surges across from a standpoint of energy consumption. So what we're seeing is now new uses for weather data going beyond kind of the use of the watch and warn mission that we have, but now also informing industry from a standpoint of making business decisions.
Cool. Carl?
Across the board, energy and its data management, that's been part and parcel of what we've been doing for many years. And we're also moving into, very exciting times. Our Energy Information Agency used data for years to do its analysis and predictions. And they are one of the biggest and new enthusiastic parts of the Department of Energy wanting to use data.gov to get that information out there and see what others can do with that data in helping make really smart decisions. Our Office of Science. Scientists generate data as part of their job every single day, and I could argue over a beer that our Office of Science is probably one of the premier data manager, entities in the federal government, given the uncountable, thousands of petabytes of data that they deal with on a year-to-year basis. Our environmental cleanup, one of the very interesting uses of data that you might not think of is the long-term health effects. The Department of Energy has got a very close and association with the health sector in terms of what are the health impacts of long-term exposures in and around not only the people cleaning up the data sites but the people that live around them. Okay, so working with EPA on water contamination and what have you. So we're doing that. And smart grid, to me, is probably one of the most exciting areas because that encompasses what I characterize as three general components. And this is my characterization. First, smart grid deals with energy generation and production. Smart grid deals with the consumer end of that. Okay, it deals with the connection of the two. Okay. And there's an immense amount of need for data observations, and data integration. And the infrastructure, as Adrian was talking about earlier, to make that all happen. You heard Michael Howell talk briefly at the end there about broadband and the smart grid. Those two things are inseparable because as many of you are probably out there working with the Amanas and the Osters to put sensors and technologies into the toasters and the blenders, that will go into all our homes and have that integrated back into the smart grid so that the use of your toaster on Sunday morning will be fed back into the local nuclear power plant in making energy-generating decisions. Okay? That's the concept, and if you stop and think about it for a little bit, there are just enormous data integration challenges. We're not talking about collecting this data and doing some analysis and making some decisions, a few days or a few hours down the road. We're talking about millisecond-type decision-making that has to be integrated into this. There's just the challenges there are immeasurable as far as data management, data utilization, and the decisions that can get made from it.
For GSA, I think The impact on us is going to be significantly more data gathering. The agency received money for fuel-efficient, flex-fuel cars. Those are interesting when you buy a whole fleet of flex-fuel vehicles. But what kind of fuel is actually going in the vehicle? Well, that takes a collection system to actually know that when the agency, when the person is at the gas pump. And for that transaction to go back through the Fed Fleet Charge System and to notify GSA, well, the cars are being fueled 90% of the time with standard gasoline. So we're not getting the benefit. In order to drive the benefits of these, you've got to have the data. Same thing on the building side. When the data center inventory was to be done and OMB came to us, we had some data on the buildings and some data centers, but we quickly realized that it was dated, some of it was not defined enough, and a new data call had to occur in order to produce the results that Mike showed this morning. And when you look at what needs to be done with all the federal buildings across the government, not just the data centers, there's a huge amount of data that needs to be set up, collected on a real-time basis or a very frequent basis in order to be able to manage what we have. And that lack of information now is going to probably spur additional systems that we previously didn't have in place.
Very interesting. I'm going to kind of take on a trend that I'm seeing here and talk and kind of move into the area of innovation. And I think for our industry partners, too, how can you help us, you know, with this innovation? So we are starting to get the data sources. We're starting to think more about data and data sources. But then we also have to think about infrastructure and how we're going to manage all this data and make it you know, useful to decision makers and integrate data across the board. And use this data for modeling. So like in the area of climate change, you know, if we know climate change is coming and it impacts one area, how can we shift whatever we're doing in that area to another geographical area that maybe isn't impacted? So my point, if climate change is impacting the agricultural market in the south and we see it's not going to impact, you know, in the northwest, or that's going to be a more viable environment for agriculture, how can we today use some of this data, mash up the data, and be predictive about, you know, where we're going in the future and how we can adapt to some of these changes in the environment, changes in energy? So with that kind of as the stage, what are some of the innovative technologies either each of you in your organizations are looking at to manage and use this data for your mission, or that you think needs to be creative or where there needs to be innovation to help us manage this data to, you know, complete our mission? So and high-performance computing, modeling. So with that as kind of the background and the question, Adrian, do you want to jump in first?
I'll jump in first, okay. And let me take a low-tech and a high-tech perspective.
Okay.
So low-tech was one of the things that amazed me was I think I was on a trip to Croatia, and I met a gentleman from East Africa who was a weather bubba, you know, a meteorologist. And he was with the private sector. And he actually was, his role was to adopt a number of small farmers and to give them meteorological kind of counseling on what crops to grow based on the trends, the long-term trends for the year on from a standpoint of climate. And so I was thinking about that from a standpoint of why aren't we doing that, just as you mentioned, from a standpoint of looking at our agricultural sector. And I think some of us are doing that, but why aren't we kind of putting out those long-term trends and then making crop selection decisions based on that to then boost, hopefully, the economic return on the back end? So that's kind of the low-tech kind of piece, and I think that's beginning to happen because we are looking at many of the agricultural aspects and use of weather data, and so I think that's well on its way, but I think we need to do it more in a comprehensive manner. Mm-hmm. High-tech piece is really now saying, you know, how do we invest in our high-performance computing infrastructure? Where will they reside? You know, now with the power requirements associated with the number of the versions of software and hardware that are required now to get to petaflop kinds of processing, you know, we're going to be confined to certain areas only being able to support our high-performance computing infrastructure. So we need to begin to think about that as we strategize on how we're going to address issues of climate. next-gen, as far as the next-generation airspace, is going to require a lot of high-performance computing capability in order to get us where we need to be. And so I think that we're going to have to really begin to look at this data from a standpoint of not only just looking at it from a weather perspective, but all data on how we make informed decisions that will hopefully improve our chances of success. And so I think that it's been done kind of in a microcosm in the past, but now that all this data is pretty much hopefully open and transparent and available, now you can begin to look at those decisions from a number of different perspectives, from a weather perspective, from a water perspective, from an energy consumption perspective, and now begin to make a better informed decision. And I would assume that not only the government would be doing that, but also the private sector and nonprofits would be doing the same. And then I think the last thing I would say is the impact to state and local. So the state and local economies, with data.gov now you're beginning to see the states stand up like capabilities. And I think they're doing that because they realize that their data is also stovepiped and not necessarily open and transparent to their citizens and their constituencies. And they're linking it to the federal data. And so I think you're going to really see a lot of things move forward first at the local and state level, because that's where right now they're really in distress. I mean, I look at Detroit, and for me, I think it's unpalatable from a standpoint of just allowing that city to just fall into the ocean, if you will. And maybe there are plans there, but I don't see them kind of out there right now on how they're going to recover. And the same was kind of said for New Orleans after Katrina. Mm-hmm. Are we going to rebuild it? And these locations, these communities are mainstays within our country and have a long history. So I guess, my thing is, I think some of these, I would look to you as industry and then also nonprofits. Is there an ability for you guys to take some of this capability and go and reinvest in those communities and think about new capabilities for using data to support those economies?
Yeah, and a good example, you bring up, cities. So I'm from Pittsburgh, home of the Pittsburgh Steelers. They're going to recover from that loss Sunday. But I digress. So where I was going with Pittsburgh, so back in the 70s when I grew up there, right, I mean, you'd walk outside to play, you couldn't see your hand in front of your face. There was so much smog and pollution and everything else from the steel mills. And EPA came in, gave the city a lot of data. Well, and then the Japanese came in and took the steel industry. But EPA was the key point that pointed out, here's your problems, here's
EPA
how we need to
force the industry over to Japan?
No, of course I would never say that. But having the data about pollution, working with EPA on cleaning up pollution, Pittsburgh very successfully used a lot of that data, used best management practices from across the country to clean the city up after time and reinvented itself as new industries came in. And so I'm tying that back to data and the use of data and the availability of data, from the EPA standpoint in terms of cleaning up the air and such there. And I think EPA over time, too, it was built on the foundation of right to know, getting data out to the consumer, to cities, et cetera. So I'd like, if you could, Todd, kind of answer that question and take it in terms of innovation and other ways, creative ways, like I mentioned, Pittsburgh, we're using data or could capitalize on innovations.
Well, back to the drinking water and surface water dilemma. For most of you that don't know water, there's two main acts. There's the Safe Drinking Water Act and there's the Clean Water Act. And never the two shall meet except when it comes to source water protection, which is the concept of protect it before it gets into the streams and into your tap. Well, let me digress and talk about a history lesson with technology. The first mainframe in the civilian sector actually was at EPA housing a system called Storet, which was a system to collect samples of drinking water quality. That was before EPA was even invented. It was actually Public Health Service. That system then evolved into ambient water quality, what's in your streams and lakes. And at the time, this is a mainframe system. States and local governments didn't have capacity. They relied upon EPA as that storage mechanism for the water quality. What happens? We invent PCs, and that distributed ability means our data connection to that local and state provider, we're no longer needed. We're no longer relevant. the states can take care of it on their own, EPA is left with a hole, per se. Well, now as we look at cloud, we're almost moving back into there's the ability to create that water commons through the cloud, both with the federal agencies, industry, and state and local governments, that not only can we conserve energy, we can conserve and protect this information to make better management decisions. So the question then becomes, what is our transport mechanisms to take data directly from sensors and stream it to a cloud storage environment where it can be accessible to all? Ames, the NASA program at Ames just came out with some monitoring applications for their iPhone. Well, it won't be long until you can have a monitoring app for water plugged into your iPhone. So you've just now increased at a low cost citizen observatories, which do two things. Take our data volume up substantially and reconnect the American public with the resource that they care about. So the question becomes is how do we position ourselves as a federal government to provide those incentives and infrastructure to make that work? That each agency isn't off building their own siloed approach to water quality.
Awesome. Cool. Keith or Carl, how about the era of innovation? Those are some great examples. So you guys want to jump in?
At Energy, they just keep coming.
Yeah.
Those of you that were at Supercomputer this week, which is still going on, the Department of Energy is still the 800-pound gorilla in the top 500 for supercomputers. We have six of the top 10 in the Department of Energy. And when you look at those, most of those are what you would consider serial number one of a particular technology, if not, no serial number at all, because they're a unique technology. Okay, but what drove those and what will continue to drive all that innovation and partnering with industry is the need for more and more data calculations for a ton of reasons. And one of the things that we're working on, at least in my office, which I want to see expand, we're doing a lot of sensor installing in our data center to use some new applications to actually look at, in real time, a whole variety of parameters in your data center, airflow, thermal dynamics, particulates, the whole nine yards, so that as you go in and you make changes as simple as moving one perforated tile from in front of the computer to behind the computer, for example, or closing up a perforated tile, you can see pretty much in real time the effect of that as you move along. And one of the things that Secretary Chu has articulated and continues to articulate is actually a follow-on to that is to expand that sort of technology to buildings. You monitor them in real time and have add sensors that can detect the number of people in a room, okay, and in real time. Determine whether the lights need to be on, determine how much heating or cooling needs to be in the room, etc. All done real time. Expand that to, again, the building. Expand that to a group of buildings. Expand that to a community. Expand that to a city, Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good example.
And now you start to really begin to see the challenges. It gets back to the broadband issue. It gets back to the computational issues. I see the tip of that iceberg, and I would like to see that continue. Again, just immense number of opportunities there to use technology and be innovative in dealing with our energy.
Cool. Keith?
I think we've gotten to a time where the things that we used to talk about as possibilities in information technology are really coming true, where with exposing the data, the capabilities to process it are really bringing about possible changes. What that's going to mean, I think, is going to be a lot more focus on the data quality, the way it's put out there, the identifications, the metadata that's in it, use of Sparkle, RDF, things of that those things, open links to open data. So I think it's going to drive more utilization and actual practical use of it, where before it may have been put in place for academic purposes or a particular stovepipe, but now we're going to really be able to do those kind of mashups and benefit from the data that we didn't do before.
Great. I think what I'm going to do is pose one more question and then kind of open it up for Q&As. And so we've talked about a lot of the you know, cool opportunities here for particularly in general across the government for data and the availability of data and then in support of our mission and some of the innovations. So we touched on a little bit, but what are some of the challenges that you can see out there in terms of information management, data management, let's touch on that. Who would like to start with that discussion? So, Keith?
Quality.
Yeah.
What we find is that where an agency may have a data set that 95% correct is good enough for the policy decisions they're making, but when you put it out there and expose it, somebody finds those two or three major errors, errors in data sets there, and it becomes an issue. You're seeing that going on right now on the Recovery Act. The news last night was the pushback on, is all the data on recovery.gov absolutely correct all the time? And I thought the president's answer was a great one. Well, no, but it's a whole lot better than it's ever been before, and it's going to get better. So I think you have that same thing in a lot of the data that we have. There are errors in data, and you know, the price of 100% accurate data all the time is very high. So we're going to have to live with the quality description that we put in the data. We expect this data to be 98% correct, and it's good enough for the use that we're using it for. So I think that's going to be somewhat of a change and a wake-up for some folks.
You bring up a really good point there. I mean, it's fascinating for me to watch the whole, Earl Devaney said this much better than I'm going to say it right now. He's the head of the Transparency Board, and he said from the beginning, he said, hey, guys, you know, we're going to put this data out there in accordance with what, you know, the law says, what ARA says, but be careful what you're asking for with open government and with transparency because, you know, as quick as we're going to get the data out there, there's going to be data quality issues. There's going to be problems with it. So just be prepared for that. And, you know, he certainly predicted it. So is it better to have the data out there and have people questioning the data, or do you want to get to that 100%, you know, accuracy? And I think it's awesome to watch all this. This is democracy in process right now. You know, the data's out there. People are looking at it. People care enough to question it. I think that's awesome. They're part of the democratic process. So so I think it's a good thing. But let's continue on with the discussion on challenges, or maybe you want to talk through that. So, Carl?
It's kind of a follow-on to the quality issue, and that is the actual validation. We've talked about, and the other challenge, of course, is the integration. But people mash up all this data and they come up with an observation or pontification of some kind. Well, how are we validating those things? What is the validation of that? And, you know, and we're seeing just a little bit of it today. Just in the health arena. Look what just came out this week about breast cancer screening.
Yeah.
Okay, where did that pontification come from? It came from collecting data.
Yeah.
Okay, so what's the validity? What was the validity of the previous advice? Okay, those sorts of issues are going to grow exponentially, and how do we deal with them? How do we deal with it? Yeah. People are going to get in information overload. We want to do this to make decisions, okay? If we're not careful about it and don't go into it with our eyes open, we are actually going to we're going to be paralyzed.
Yeah.
We'll have so much data, so many conclusions coming out of all of this stuff, we won't know which is right.
Yeah.
Okay? From our day-to-day decisions on, is it going to rain today, to, What do I do about my health issue?
Yeah, that's a good point.
So validation is critical.
Todd,
so
Todd wanted to jump in and then Adrian.
I mean, aside from the it's not a technology problem, you're looking at change management issues anytime you deal with this type of transformation. The other concept that comes to my mind that we need to do a better job of is considering the data lifecycle. and it's not just provisioning it once and it goes away and it's there. That just like IT, solid IT investments are managed with a life cycle, data needs to be managed as a life cycle with a corporate eye towards that. And we need to see some strengthening in the governance over data management.
Good point.
Yeah, kind of in the same vein. The other thing I was going to say was kind of almost in response to Carl's plea or challenge would be the authoritative source issue. I mean, we've got to, you know, once you put your data out there, who's really going to be the person that decision makers follow? I mean, luckily, under the Organic Act, the Weather Service has that clearly defined within its mission. But there are other agencies that actually don't have that much definition or some place to actually hang their hat on as far as them being the authoritative source for the data holdings that they have. And so then there's going to be this sense of competitiveness. Who is right? And I agree that's going to be a challenge. I guess the next thing would be the fiscal challenges. I mean, we are a nation at war. We're a nation right now, if you look at the economic health of the country, there's a lot of concern. I think our way out of that is through some of the challenges and opportunities that have been mentioned today, which is energy conservation and cutting down our consumption, you know, reducing carcinogens and those types of things. Those are going to be vastly important. And they're not only important from a standpoint of just saving or sustaining the economy, but it goes back to this whole issue of where will the money come from to innovate? Mm-hmm. I mean, I look at other countries right now. If you look at China and India, they have now gone away from mass production. They're no longer kind of saying, okay, if you can mass produce and do that well, you're going to be at the top level of our country. No, they're taking the top 10% now, and if you can innovate, that's what they're now reinforcing and investing in. But if you look at the U.S. government right now, we're kind of doing that in a stovepipe manner, but they're doing it at a national level. And so where are we going to be if we don't begin to think about how we cut costs or stop doing the things that no longer make sense and now put that money towards some innovative ideas that people in this room may come up with or some student in some kind of university has thought of that will lead us out of this position that we're in. But I really see kind of this whole energy dialogue as really being one area where, you know, some resources will be made available then to facilitate investment in innovation.
Yeah, great. Great comments. Let me just open it up. I got about 5 minutes left here. So I guess two questions. Does anybody have some questions they'd like to ask the panel?
This is for Mr. Gardner. What are some innovations you are doing or aware of in data management?
Say again, I barely heard you again.
I'm sorry. What are some innovations you are doing or you're aware of in data management?
Well, I mean, Weather Service is actually leading in the pack. Our struggle is governance. we're doing things such as we're at Twitter at this point from a standpoint of data has been identified in a number of our service assessments as a best management practice. So we're actually, our meteorologists are sending Twitter feeds out to emergency managers and actually members of the television media that they directly know and work with during hazardous kinds of conditions and severe weather instances and events. The other thing is you see a lot of RSS feeds coming out. I think we have over 55 right now RSS feeds that are available off the Weather Service webpage. Another great thing that we're actually using is what we're calling NWS chat, which is a real-time chat feature that we use during severe weather as well, where we actually hold a chat session directly with the TV meteorologist and the emergency managers real-time when we... It's kind of almost pre-decisional data, but we're trying to get everybody positioned. If we see that things are definitely going in a bad way, then we basically begin to warn the community, if you will, to be on guard. And so we've used a number of these technologies and the data as almost a precautionary kinds of capabilities. So there's a lot that we're doing. Again, our major challenge is governance and where do we stop and where do we begin? Again, because a lot of this is still pre-decisional from the Weather Service's perspective as far as a product. our main products that everybody must rely on is the watch and warning. And those are the products that then kick everybody into action. Our main concern about that is then you have these pre-decisional kinds of capabilities out there through chat and so on and so forth that may cause more harm than good in certain circumstances. But right now, the governance structure that we have is working. Yeah. But I begin to fear if we get too far over that edge that there may be some bad things that happen and we won't, we'll have to weigh whether or not that risk of putting in place those kinds of capabilities is value added and continues to be value added. But right now, I would say overwhelmingly they are. Yeah. And we've definitely seen we've been able to save more lives and save property using them.
Okay, great. And that's kind of tied to Carl's point about it's cool that it's out there, but boy, watch what we put out there now, what we're going to do with it and how the public perceives it. So actually, we only had time for one question. So I do have to end with one quick question. You're going to have about 10 seconds to answer this. And I have to ask it, and we have to answer it, or we're not allowed to drink the water or have any lunch. And the question, and you'll understand why when you hear the question, and it is, what can industry do to help you in the area of data management and helping our environmental and energy mission? So I'll start down at this end. Keith.
Okay. I think the industry has a great opportunity across the board in working with agencies on dealing with data quality, data authorship, ownership, and improving the quality of the data sets that come forward. And a lot of federal agencies be doing the work, but we know who really does the work on the ground is the industry side.
Great. Thanks, Carl.
Think strategically and act tactically. You need to think more broad, not just your little necessarily piece of the pie, okay? It's important that you work on your piece of the pie, but you got to figure out and look at how it's going to fit in strategically, okay, across all the issues that you've heard about here on data management. And that's another way of saying that is leadership.
Thanks, Carl.
You guys are going to have to step up because it's where the work's going to get done.
Great.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. There's a role for government and there's a role for the private sector. This data and this information, we can't, from a weather service perspective, we take dissemination, again, limited paths. We look at the public sector, the private sector weather services, the AccuWeathers and Weather Channels, and some of you support those companies. You got to continue to help us along because we can't do it by ourselves.
Great. Todd.
Help us steer the engagement with the colleagues that may be in the silo right next to us. You often see the solutions that are developed in the other agencies. Please point them out to us and put us in contact with each other.
That's great. That's a great one. So please join me in thanking this awesome panel. So thanks very much.